my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey, friends. I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas. This is episode 319 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. It is the end of the year, and for the last, I think actually since this podcast was started 6 years ago, or yeah, 6 years ago now, we've ended the year with the Cinti Awards, and this year is going to be different just because 2020 has been different, and I think we actually kind of deviated from the Cinti concept or the Cinti format last year a little bit as well. But my co-host, Chad Smart, and Chad, we actually started doing the Cinti Awards back when we were doing when the My 1-2-3 Cents blog was like hot and heavy. It's still a thing, but not as prevalent as it once was.
Yeah, I remember doing them. I'm trying to think of things that we predicted. I know that I had made the prediction that Yuha Nation was my top guy for breakout star for one of the years, and now I'm glad to say that Apollo Crews is still employed by WWE. So, way to go!
Yeah,
and I think Randy Orton has the record of 9 years running of least favorite wrestler. But that could be challenged this year if we talk about that.
Yeah, it may very well be, and I hope you had a great Christmas, Chad. And I know you are not in your usual sunny California as we record this particular episode, the last episode of 2020. So did you have a nice holiday?
I did. You know, it's a little bit different. I got out of California, so I was like, you know what? It's just way too nice. This 81 degrees does not feel like Christmas. Let me go to where it's 14 degrees and let me arrive after the rental car place has closed down, and let me stand outside for a half hour before realizing that they have shut down for the evening. So that was fun. That was a good start to the trip. And I was going to say, you made it through your 21 or 24-day Advent TikTok festivities.
That is true. And I actually picked up another. I'm going to do a bonus episode because I did find a unique Christmas beer on my Christmas journey to St. Louis. So that one, by the time you're listening to this podcast, is already dropped on my TikTok page as well. So I can get another day of ridicule from you and Jason Skull and whoever else wants to chime in.
Yeah, well, I figured that's why you do the TikTok videos. Just, you want engagement, so
that's true.
Engage with. So, yeah. Win-win for everybody.
It is a win-win for everybody, for sure. One thing I do want to, as we kick off the Cintis this year, and we will talk, kind of do a quick year in review of sorts, but also doing a little different, as I mentioned, and kind of looking into 2021, taking a look at the trends that happened and that were set during this COVID period and how they may or may not influence and become part of the new norm. And as much as I hate that phrase, I do think we're going to see some changes that happened this year that will stick around into next year. But before we get into the meat of the conversation, Chad, I do want to talk about the passing of two wrestlers in the last couple of days. We've actually, it seems like the last month or so, we've lost a lot of greats, not only in the ring, but just in the world of entertainment in general. And even here in Southern Illinois, we've lost a couple of very notable folks. So this past weekend, though, Danny Hodge, who I think by the time you and I started watching wrestling had been long retired, but still kind of the name had popped up from time to time. Did you know much about, or do you remember anything about Danny Hodge?
All I know about Danny Hodge is he lived in Oklahoma and he lived down the street from Jake Hagar. And JR apparently was a big fan of his.
Yeah, yeah. There was a big connection between he and Jim Ross. And like I said, you know, and this isn't to discredit anything because, by the time we started watching wrestling in the mid-80s, Danny Hodge had been long retired, and I think he might have still been doing some promotional work, behind-the-scenes stuff. But he passed away over the weekend, and, he was in his mid to late 80s. Obviously sad when anyone passes away, especially around the holidays. But Chad, the really big shock to me, and I was driving back to Southern Illinois when I got the text from you that, and I thought for some reason, you know, not that you were joking around, but that, you know, I wasn't sure if they had done something with his character and they were revamping him or what, but Brody Lee at just age 41, we lost him as well. And, you know, for fans who don't follow AEW per se, or don't remember the indie career, Brody Lee, of course, Luke Harper from the Wyatt family in his days with WWE. And that one was a huge shock.
Yeah, like you said, 41 years old, way too young. And he had been off TV, I believe, since October. His last match was against Cody Rhodes when Cody came back and won the TNT Championship. And, you know, there were reports that he was injured and whatnot, but I don't know to what extent, you know, those injuries were, and if it had anything to do with his cause of death, which his wife came out and said he had non-COVID-related lung issues. And as we record this, there's still no information, definitive reason mm-hmm. why, you know, his passing. But, yeah, that was the shock because, like you said, 41 years old, you don't expect someone to go. And by all accounts, you know, we look at the wrestling industry as a whole, and, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the wrestlers that were dying prematurely, you could kind of look at the lifestyle and say, you know, that probably played a cause into their early deaths. Whereas now the generation that is coming up seems to have a better grasp on a healthier lifestyle, or at least a non-detrimental lifestyle mm-hmm. that the older generation have. And so, you know, I don't know Brody Lee personally or John Huber, as his shoot name is, but by all accounts, really great guy, great family man, great father. And so, yeah, our condolences go out to his family and friends. It's just, I'm curious to see where AEW will take the Dark Order storyline now, because mm-hmm. he was their leader. Mm. You know, I don't think they'll drop it because it is a huge part. And, I don't think they're going to come out on this week's episode and be like, okay, here's a new leader. Like,
right.
I think we'll give it time to breathe and maybe, you know, a month or two down the road, come up with something. But, it was a shock when I saw it. So.
You know, and I do want to talk a little bit about, because I you know, Brody Lee or, Luke Harper, as I would know him best as, from his run in WWE, is one of those guys that I feel like, you know, reading the condolences and, you know, obviously learning that he was an amazing father and husband and family man and friend, and just an all around nice guy. And, you know, obviously you hate to see anyone, lose a father or lose a friend, whatever the case may be. But, you know, Brody Lee kind of seemed like he was a really great individual. And I don't feel like appreciated him enough as a performer. You actually kind of turned me to him back in his days in Chikara, because he looked so much like, and I'm assuming this is where we get the Brody Lee name from, is his resemblance to the late, great King Kong Bruiser Brody.
I think it's a combination of Bruiser Brody and Jason Lee, mm-hmm. who played the character Brody in Mallrats.
Okay.
Where they tried to resemble, so that's Brody Lee, Brody, Jason Lee.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you know, for Chikara, he was a bigger man, and the wild hairstyle and big beard, it just kind of fit the Bruiser Brody motif. But I remember him coming into Chikara when he was known as the Big Rig, Brody Lee. And actually before that, he would come out to New Kids on the Block, The Right Stuff, which, I'll pop for that anytime it happens. But I knew him from his Chikara days, and there's a match. I don't know if it's on independentwrestling.tv or if it's only on the Chikaratopia service, if that's still around, but he fought Claudio Castagnoli, a.k.a. Cesaro, in, I believe, Chikara's only steel cage match from the ECW arena.
Oh, wow.
And that's just two big guys, you know, going in there and beating the snot out of each other.
Yeah. So. I saw Chris Hero had tweeted that, particular, or at least a portion of that match. I wondered if it was Chikara because, like you just said, I didn't remember them doing cage matches that seemed kind of outside of their wheelhouse. So, what were your thoughts on him when he went to WWE? Because, you know, obviously I paid more attention during that time period. And I thought, to me, you know, there are guys that are great singles guys that, you know, are going to go far in the business. And then there are guys that fit in that ensemble, you know, and I'm going to throw out some names and this may disappoint or annoy some people. But, you know, I always thought that like Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard were better as a tag team and part of the Four Horsemen versus their individual careers. The same with, you know, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. I thought they were better as a tag team and part of DX than as on their own. And, you know, at least from my perspective, I thought that Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, as part of the Wyatt family, were just better as part of that unit. And you know, he did have some success on his own and won the Intercontinental Championship, but then was quickly repaired with Eric Rowan and repackaged as the Bludgeon Brothers. But I just thought he seemed like one of those guys that fit into that group mentality, if you will, and some people may disagree with that, and you may disagree with that. Having watched him as a developing star in Chikara and on the independent scene,
no, I think he was capable of both, but I agree that at least in WWE, coming in with the Wyatt family, like they just had that look,
yeah,
and. You know, they worked well as a team. And so that, unfortunately, I think also pigeonholed him because you had Bray Wyatt being the voice of the group. And as we saw in AEW when he came in as the exalted leader of the Dark Order, that he can talk. And, you know, maybe it's his, you know, the look he also has, the bushy beard, the long hair. He looks more. You're not going to expect him to start quoting Shakespeare,
right?
But and, you know, even when he won the IC title, I think I don't think it fit the character,
right?
That
yeah,
makes sense. And so, I was curious to see what AEW would do with him once he came back. You know, because the Dark Order started out pretty mediocre. And then when he came in, they started getting over. I think, you know, if fans were still in attendance, I think the Dark Order would be up huge based on their being the elite presence on the YouTube channel. If a lot of the fans were watching that show, but that's really helped them develop personalities.
Gotcha. And,
I think he was very versatile. And even in Chikara, he did have a team called the Roughnecks with the Grizzly Redwood, the Littlest Lumberjack, and also with Eddie Kingston was in that group for a little bit. I think they were part of King of Trios. And so they worked together. But I think Luke was very, or Brody, whatever you want to call him, was very adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Bray Wyatt referred to him as their Terry Gordy. And
okay.
He could go in there and I think have a good match with anybody. And I think he probably was overlooked based on how he was used in WWE and not really being able to show off a whole lot of his personality or his skill.
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, you kind of alluded to it earlier, and this has been, 2020 has been a rough year in general, but just, you know, to lose someone on an active roster who still had so much, you know, to give back to the pro wrestling business and the potential that he had, and who knows, the sky was the limit. And, you know, unfortunately, he is no longer with us. So, again, our thoughts, our condolences, our prayers go out to the friends and the fans and the family of John Huber, a.k.a. Brody Lee, a.k.a. Luke Harper, of the Wyatt family.
If you have the WWE Network, they do have a series called, I think it's like Before They Were Famous or Before They Were WWE Stars. Uh-huh. And they did an episode on him where they went back into his training and showed some of his independent stuff pre-WWE. So I'd recommend checking that out for anybody who wants to get kind of a more better glimpse of the man behind the beard.
Very good. Very well said, Chad. Thank you.
And his name is Brody Lee.
I am Harper, formerly known as Brody Lee, formerly known as Huber Boy 2, and formerly known as Jonathan Huber.
This is kind of like, I would say, where it all began in a professional wrestling ring. It's just a martial arts place. We had fans, we sold tickets. It was pretty cool.
We would put a ring up and have shows, and the first couple we would just wrestle the guys that we knew. And then from there, as time went on, of course, professional wrestling just allows you to mix and mingle. And then we all became friends. We all decided what we wanted. Well, and that was just to be in a ring.
As we transition now into the Senti's part of the podcast, and you know, Chad kind of alluded to it earlier with some of the predictions, or not predictions, there were a couple of Senti awards, I guess, that were predictions of who would have a good next year or whatever the case may be. And if I would have thought ahead, I would have pulled up all of our old Senti records. But I kind of want to pick your brain a little bit because, you know, admittedly, and part of it is because I did cut the cord with cable, so I don't have the access to watch some shows as easily or as frequently as I would like to, AEW Dynamite being one of them. Even SmackDown on Friday nights, it's just an inconvenient time. But I do feel like I keep up with all the companies, all the promotions, and you know, you and I even watched a Impact Wrestling pay-per-view together earlier in the fall when you were in Southern Illinois. So I have kept up with the product, and I know what's going on for the most part. But just share with us, and we'll kind of go back and forth, I think, a little bit here on some big moments, some big memories. What were some of the favorite things that happened in 2020? The positive side of things, because everybody talks about how crappy this year was. But, you know, obviously after March, we saw a big change with no crowds, and both companies, all companies had to adapt to that. And some companies, unfortunately, have had to shutter or, you know, aren't able to do shows like they once did. Stride Pro Wrestling being one of them for right now. But talk to me a little bit about what were some of your favorite moments pre and during COVID era?
I am trying to remember what happened this year, because, you know, like you said, after March, everything has kind of become a blur.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also, real quick, trying to find last year's Senti Awards, and all I could find is the 2013 awards. Although if I probably go into December, I can probably find.
Yeah, I can't, honestly, I don't even remember how I did them last year, if I did them if I wrote them out. Because we used to write them out, and then we just recorded them live, and I would have had to have gone back and listened. And let's be honest, I probably didn't do that.
Yeah, it does not look like you did. So way to go, Kevin.
So go back. Yeah, if you want to know what we talked about last year, go back and listen. It was the last episode of 2019. You know, for me, one of the biggest, probably my favorite event of 2020 was the Royal Rumble match, or the Royal Rumble. Mm. You know, it was really, to me, the last memory that I have of wrestling before COVID hit and we lost the crowds. You know, things started off with Brock Lesnar in that number one spot, and he just kind of tore through a big chunk of the roster until eventually getting eliminated with Ricochet with a little, or, you know, Drew McIntyre with an assist from Ricochet. And then Drew McIntyre, of course, goes on to win the event. And I remember watching that, and I went to Luke Lay and Amy Lay. They've been on the podcast before. They have a really nice big Royal Rumble party each year. I actually won money at both of the ones that I've been to and been in their Royal Rumble pot. But, you know, I felt like this year really kind of set a different pace. And Drew McIntyre, I think, was a surprise pick for some folks, and his trajectory, you know, from his early days and remember running into him in a busy streets of New Orleans in 2014 during WrestleMania weekend, up to, you know, getting released after the whole three-man band experiment, and then today he's the WWE Universal Champion. So he's had a hell of a year, and it would be hard to argue. And he's one of those guys I feel like paid his dues, and he really does have that look. But I think there's still something kind of missing, and I don't know if it's because the lack of a crowd has made me less excited. But when he won the Rumble, I mean, I was really stoked. But I feel like things, and I'm guessing part of it is the lack of crowd that had made things kind of fizzle out a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's good to see that finally, after 7-8 years of being first anointed the chosen one,
mm-hmm.
that WWE has gotten behind Drew McIntyre. And I do think, you know, if we had crowds, I think he would be over huge. Yeah, I would, you know, if we were doing our normal votes, I would say that he was probably a shoe-in for Wrestler of the Year. Just, you know, even though he lost the title briefly to Randy Orton, thankfully they put it back on Drew before Survivor Series. And I think, you know, in the WWE world, he is still kind of presented lesser than Roman Reigns, in mm-hmm. the grand scheme of things. But, you can't deny the year that Drew had. And like you said, it's been pretty much the full year. So since Royal Rumble through TLC. And yeah, it's good to see him. You know, I didn't watch his appearance on the Broken Skull Ranch with Stone Cold. But I think he, you know, there are some guys that get released from WWE and then they get bitter and want to blame WWE for their shortcomings. And I think Drew went the opposite way and said, okay, let me go out, refocus my energy, and I'll come back and I'll show you what I can do. And I think I think his time in TNA helped. I think he did some other indies
mm-hmm.
that also helped him out there. And it just, you know, it's been good to see him kind of get that redemption storyline that doesn't feel forced.
Yeah.
It feels natural. So, and I'm with you that I think Royal Rumble is probably the last great show of the year just because of everything involved, you know, because you had, you know, when Brock was destroying everybody and then Drew came out, and then when we had Edge's return, it just, you know, if they, and who knows, you know, if they wouldn't have had a crowd, would they have saved Edge for when they had a crowd, you know,
because, yeah.
But that wouldn't have come off the same in an empty arena.
Right. Yeah. And that was the other thing I was going to mention about the Rumble is, you know, even though there was some speculation that he was coming back, I still think it was probably and we may disagree, when we get a little later into the discussion, but to me, it was the feel good moment of the year, you know, that return and, the way the crowd popped and just seeing him. And I honestly think he looked better than he looked when he retired. And, you know, and maybe that's an attribute to, you know, years and years and years of beating your body up and then getting that 8 or 9 year break. And you're able to, you know, rest up and get into better shape. And, you know, and obviously he's been, you know, I don't think anybody expected Edge to come back and be a full-time roster member and wrestling and doing house shows and all that, you know, had we not had COVID. You know, I think as an attraction, I'm down with seeing Edge have a handful more matches.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, because he was forced into retirement. So it's never going to see a guy not get to choose when they go out.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would, you know, give him that chance to hopefully get the better, you know, even though he did go out on top, you know, he defeated, I guess, he who the second he who shall not be named in WWE lore at WrestleMania 27. But without the fans knowing that it was his last match. So there was you know, it was just a normal match to the crowd. Whereas now if you can build up to a quote-unquote retirement match or the last match, at least going out on your own terms is always better.
Yeah, and let's circle back because you've mentioned his name twice now, and I want to know a little bit more. Randy Orton has grown on me. I feel like the last couple of years especially, he's really become probably one of the more dastardly, one of the more vicious heels on the roster, and in all of wrestling. I mean, I really enjoy his work, and I'm not going to say that I was excited that he won the championship again, but, you know, you had kind of speculated earlier in the summer that take the belt off of Drew for a bit, have Randy do a run, and then Drew gets it back when we get a crowd. And this was right before, I believe, the advent of the Thunderdome. So you were kind of right on with that in terms of, you know, giving Drew a win back in front of a crowd, because when he won the championship at WrestleMania, it just wasn't the same inside the empty performance center versus having somewhat of a crowd and somewhat of a reaction. So, but talk to me about Randy Orton. Are you still, is he still on your, you know, not a fan list?
I'm still not, I don't get excited when Randy comes on, although I think he's more moved into just that bland territory. Like I saw something a few days ago talking about Randy Orton online, and it was like, I think he has, I don't know if he's matured in the last few years or mm-hmm. he's just gotten to the point and age where he's like, okay, I don't care as much. Like, he doesn't come off like the jerk
yeah.
that he used to. And I mean that like a jerk in real life.
Right.
Apparently, you know, I've seen video of him like playing video games online and commentating and doing like Snapchat videos or, you know, Twitter videos of him and his kids out in the pool or whatnot. And so I think I don't have my great hatred, which I did look up the 2013 Centy Awards. Randy Orton did win most hated wrestler. But I also think, you know, he is helped by the fact that the Undisputed Era are around, and those are four guys that just I don't understand the appeal of. I don't get it. I will watch a Randy Orton match more willingly than I want to watch an Adam Cole baby match.
That blows my mind that you feel this way, but I understand.
Yeah, I just can't. But yeah, Orton, I mean, I think Orton's kind of also came into his own in this year, and the character development has gotten mm-hmm. better. But yeah, he's still not in my top 10 list of guys I want to see.
Understandable, completely understandable. Well, since we're still talking about Randy Orton, let's continue that conversation, and we're going to kind of jump around the year 2020, but we're ending the year on a hot note, pun intended, with Randy Orton. He set the Fiend Bray Wyatt on fire at TLC. Obviously, this got dumped on social media. We really, you know, as we record this, we don't know what's in store, but we're recording this about a week after the fact, and we've seen Raw, and I don't think there was any mention of Bray on, or at least The Fiend on Raw. Where do you think this is going? And this will kind of get into our predictions for 2021 too, I guess. You know, can you burn a guy alive like this character, and still bring the same character back? Or is this going to be another invention or reinvention of the Bray Wyatt character universe?
I think it will be an evolution of the Bray Wyatt character.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, this is one of those things that happens where, because wrestling is a scripted entertainment, however it is presented in a realistic manner,
mm-hmm.
that you get that blurred line of, you know, if you're watching Dexter and Dexter kills somebody, you're like, okay, he kills him and you move on.
Right.
But if you're watching an NBA game and Dwight Howard murders someone on the court, you're going to be like, wait a minute, the police are probably going to get involved.
Right.
So it's a weird factor. And I think, you know, it was shocking, which maybe that's what WWE wanted. They just wanted to end on a note that would get people talking. And but like you said, okay, you burn the guy and everybody just stands around watching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I texted you, it's like, it's really great how Michael Cole was so concerned with Randy Orton setting the Fiend on fire that he sat at the desk and just talked while it happened instead of trying to intervene and talk sense into Orton. And, you know, it's for me, that it's taking the realm of logical storyline a little too far.
Right.
You know, I could understand when he had Orton in the rocking chair and poured the gasoline and lit that on fire and Randy escaped. Like, okay, fine. He's trying to kill him, but he's not actually doing so. But actually setting him on fire and the show going off the air as if that's perfectly normal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit much.
Well, my favorite thing was the reaction online by some fans. And you know, probably my least favorite thing of 2020 in terms of wrestling is the way fans react to stuff. And you know, I think you and I text each other things that we wouldn't necessarily say on social media just because, you know,
we're just, you know, joshing each
other. It's partly venting and it's partly, you know, but the people that said, you know, it's so obvious that was a dummy and not the real Bray. Like, no shit. They're not going to really set the guy on fire, no matter how much protection he has. So, you know, anybody that watched that and that was their criticism of it was that it obviously wasn't the real Bray Wyatt, you know, whatever. But I agree. I do think this is another step in the evolution. And I love, you know, the Fiend character kind of coupled with the Bray Wyatt, you know, the Firefly Funhouse host, if you will. So I'm curious to see where that evolution is going to go on to into the new year.
Yeah, and, you know, I couldn't find any reports whether or not Donald Trump actually called WWE to see if the Fiend was okay, like he did after Vince got blown up in the limo.
That's right. I forgot about that.
you know, maybe Trump has a little bit more on his plate today than he did back then. But and you know, this is where we also go with storytelling in WWE. It's how long will it take for them to acknowledge Randy Orton burned the Fiend alive? You know,
mm-hmm.
if Orton comes out on Monday night and they don't mention it, they don't play it up, then what was the point of doing it?
Right.
And I am all for a slow, no pun intended, but a slow burn of telling a story. But, you know, it's kind of like when Sting showed up right before Survivor, or at Survivor Series 2016, was it? Yeah. And then we never saw Sting again for like 5 months. And it's like, well, why did he come out? You know, what was the whole point? So, yeah, I think you have to acknowledge that Randy Orton is a murderer and move the story along. But, you know, there's also rumors and innuendo that USA wants a more adult direction,
mm-hmm.
Or adult content for Raw. You know, we've discussed it before. I don't think we can go back to the Attitude Era in terms of content because in today's environment, you'll get canceled very quickly.
Yeah.
If you start doing bra and panty matches or, you know, some of the insults that they would throw around. So I'm curious to see what will happen. But I don't really think you need murder as a as an adult content, unless you're going to bring back Brizango as the fashion police and have them tracking down and trying to find out, you know, trying to track Randy Orton and arrest him.
And yeah, get him arrested. Well, you mentioned someone else, and I want to kind of flow with this. So since you brought it up, I'm going to keep it flowing in this direction of a big event from 2020, and that was Sting. You mentioned him appearing in WWE. Just, 3 weeks ago, maybe? Sting shows back up on TNT for the first time since, Nitro went out of business, or WCW went out of business, almost 20 years ago. What are your thoughts? Sting is back in wrestling, and he's, I guess he's made it clear that he did not like the way things went in WWE, which I don't disagree with. But do we need a nearly 60-year-old Steve Borden Sting in the ring having matches, or does he become a manager? What do you want to see out of Sting in 2021?
If they can make us believe Sting can have a good match, I would like to see him have a decent match. You know, kind of going back to the Edge comment, I don't think Sting's last match against Seth Rollins was probably the way he wanted to go out.
Mm-hmm.
So have him do something better. The storyline that's going on, I'm not 100% sold on, just because I'm still not sold on Darby Allin.
Yeah.
And the Cody involvement and Team Taz. But it's what I was just saying about Randy Orton. At least AEW is trying to take steps either weekly or every other week and move the story forward.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see where it goes. You know, Sting hasn't come out and said, here's what's going to happen. He just came out this past week and said, I remember Dusty Rhodes taking me under his wing and kind of creating the Sting character and then put me in there with Flair, and that helped build my career. And it seems like that's what he wants to do with Darby Allin. AEW was supposed to do a War Game style match prior to shutting down, and maybe this will lead to a War Game style with Sting, Cody, Darby, someone else taking on Team Taz, and you save Sting for the last man in, and just having him go in there for a few minutes. I don't know. And then you have Arn Anderson turn on him, because that has to happen at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the law of wrestling, is that, Ric Flair shows up out of nowhere just to turn on Sting, and he's confused that he doesn't know where he is, but he knows he has to turn on Sting. That's, I hope AEW doesn't get in the habit of just bringing back older stars or, ex-WWE stars that get let go. And so far, the ones that they have brought in, for the most part, they've used decently. So I'm willing to give them, a chance, because we've made fun of Impact over the years that if this would have been Impact, Sting would have won the title on his first night in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And AEW has kept him out of the ring so far. So I'm in for the long story. I want to see where it goes, and then I will, either criticize or praise it once I know where it's going.
Yeah, and I think that's important for fans to do, and I mentioned how annoying wrestling fans can be from time to time, and that's that lack of patience is a big part of that. And, since you brought up Impact Wrestling as well, on the same night that we see Sting, another huge thing happens where Kenny Omega wins the AEW championship from Jon Moxley and is accompanied by Don Callis, who I think most fans know is part of the management. I don't know what his official role is with Impact as far as the story goes, but he's a big player on Impact Wrestling. And now we're seeing, crossover and obviously a relationship that is developed there. Do you think this is a sustainable and a long-term thing, or is this just something to kind of get fans talking? And will 2021, will we see more of these collaborations and should the WWE be worried in regards to these kinds of things?
It was a shocking moment. I don't, looking in from the outside, I don't know what benefit it gives to AEW, because obviously they are the de facto number two promotion, and Impact is very far down on the list, even though I think Impact probably had the two best years of their or two of their better years, and at least in the last 15, over the last 2 years, even without an audience, they seem to have a focus and pushing decent, you know, sensible storylines. But, you know, how many fans actually can still watch Impact? You know, how many people get access? You know, they're not an easy channel to find, or you know, you have to watch on Twitch, which then you have to watch when it's on, and that can be a problem. So I think it's an interesting idea, and it kind of reminds me, if I have memory correct, of AWA Super Clash, mm-hmm. when wasn't that like AWA and World Class mm-hmm. and coming together?
Yeah.
So I wonder if there are talks, you know, behind the scenes of, you know, can Ring of Honor get involved? Because they have, you know, one of the things you're looking at is in Impact, Kenny Omega has kind of aligned himself with the Good Brothers, who were members of the Bullet Club. You know, I think Ring of Honor still has some prior Bullet Club members. Is there a working relationship with New Japan Wrestling? Will we see, you know, is this kind of what fans have been wanting for the last 5-6 years of the Bullet Club taking over? Because even in AEW, the Young Bucks have started using a dual V-trigger finishing move, which is Kenny Omega's, one of his finishers.
Mm.
You know, how does that tie into everything? So, yeah, it's another one of those stories that I'll give a time to see where it goes. I don't know what it means for the two companies. I don't think AEW needs the TNA guys to come in because they have enough roster spots of their own that they can't, you know, a lot of guys don't get TV time. Impact is not doing shows in front of a crowd, so what's the benefit of an AEW guy going to Impact? But we'll see. And, you know, the best thing is it was something that was unexpected and wasn't spoiled before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the reaction was one of genuine surprise when Don Callis said, you know, I'll tell you what's going on Tuesday. And they're like, but Dynamite airs on Wednesday. He's like, yeah, but Impact's on Tuesday. See you at Impact. It's like, okay, now I have to watch Impact. Mm-hmm. So yeah, hopefully it's a good crossover, beneficial to both companies.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it will, you know, like I said, wrestling is different. It looks different. It feels different. We consume it differently in 2020 than we have before. And I do think that maybe another positive of COVID has been, even though they are pre-producing and putting a lot of these shows, you know, they'll record one live and then put one in the can and air it the next week. There's been a lot of secrets still kept. You know, WrestleMania, for example, I didn't see any spoilers for WrestleMania. I wasn't really seeking them out either. But a lot of times, you know, you see these morons that posted on Twitter with the headline of new champion crowned at WrestleMania,
yeah.
You know, 5 days before the show airs. So I didn't see much of that. And I do think that because fans aren't on hand watching, you know, at the airports or watching these guys and gals go in and out of arenas and stuff, there's been a little bit less of that kind of surprise factor ruined because, you know, I didn't know Sting was going to show up. I heard some rumblings. I knew that his deal with WWE had expired. So I just, you know, the smart money was that he was going to end up in AEW. No reason for him not to. But like you said, too, with the whole Impact Wrestling thing, that was completely out of left field. So good on them for, you know, providing some surprises, because as a fan, that's what I want. You know, I tell the story all the time. In 1991, when I was watching Wrestling Challenge, and at the end, Bobby Heenan is holding Ric Flair's WCW Heavyweight Championship, I could not believe it. Now, had that happened 10 years later, it would have been all over the internet before it even aired. So, you know, kudos to AEW and to Impact for kind of keeping the cat in that bag. Couple more things from 2020 to talk about that I want to kind of get your thoughts on. Roman Reigns, finally, they pulled the trigger on him, you know, kind of turning and now has Paul Heyman as his manager, so or his advocate. What does that do for the future as far as Brock Lesnar goes with WWE? Is he done? Is he out of the picture? Or does he come back without anyone? And was it a smart pairing to put Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman together? I personally am digging it. I like this head of the table. I'm still not 100% sold on the Uso role in this, just because it's like going from that tag team, kind of like we talked about earlier with Luke Harper, that tag team mentality to now trying to buy this guy, as a singles guy has been hard for me. It'd be like, them putting Axe or Smash in there against Hulk Hogan back in the day. I would have never bought one of those guys beating Hulk Hogan for the championship. But I get the family line and the storyline that they're trying to develop with that.
Yeah, this is one of those things where it would have been interesting to see how a crowd would be reacting to Roman Reigns if it was there. I think, I'm still not sold on Roman as an in-ring wrestler. I still think he over-relies on the drive-by and the Superman punch and the spear. But that's kind of WWE formula. You just have your three or four moves and you work them around punching kicks, and that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the attitude that Roman is showing now is something that is better than what we've gotten the last couple of years out of Roman Reigns. And I think the pairing with Heyman is good because, when Roman was in the Shield, I think he worked best because he was the silent but deadly member of the Shield. You could have Rollins talking or Ambrose, and Roman was there to be the muscle. And so now you can have Heyman talking him up, and then Roman just goes out and doesn't care what he does in a match, doesn't care if he hurts, his own family member, because it's his yard and he's defending it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that works. I think the Jey Uso storyline is interesting. And, I wonder what would have happened if the other Uso wasn't injured. Would they have still kind of done this? And I think the fact that you have that family dynamic and you had Roman be so violent with Jey and just like, look, the beatings are going to continue until morale improves, He didn't care that it was his own family member. He was going to do what he wanted to do anyway. So I think that's helping Roman out. Now, you mentioned Brock Lesnar, and I believe rumor is that Brock's contract is up, and I don't see WWE bringing him back until there is a crowd because, the money that they pay Brock, I don't think is worth an empty arena match. Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting. Or would you have, Brock stay on Raw and Roman on SmackDown, and then Heyman just flip between the two shows?
Yeah.
They kind of take over each. I also don't know if I want to see the rumored Roman versus Rock match at WrestleMania, just because you mentioned you couldn't see Axe or Smash beating Hogan. Yes, I know Rock came back and beat CM Punk for the title, which, we can do a whole episode on why that was a bad decision and how I really was not fond of that, but how it had to happen to set up the rematch with John Cena. But if Rock comes in, it seems like he would only be coming in to put Roman over and kind of give him extra bump, which would be sad that a guy who hasn't wrestled full time in nearly 20 years has to come back to give someone the bump. I would rather see like Roman versus Big E for the title and have Big E upset Roman, because I think that would help Big E get over that hump of being a big star.
I'm glad you brought up Rock, because I do think that has been kind of the big discussed plan. And I agree. I don't think, although I look at it a little differently than you do, I feel like, tying in with the family story and going in that direction, but it would be clearly just to get Roman over. And, would it work or would it backfire is what I worry about is, Do you do that in front of a crowd? I don't see, and I know that, I can't remember which of the Conrad podcasts this was discussed on. It might have been the Arne Anderson podcast, but does The Rock really come back and do a match without a live crowd? You know, again, that seems like a big waste on that investment as well. So, and by March or April, we may see crowds again. I don't know, but I just I have a hard time buying into Rock Roman Reigns. I wouldn't necessarily hate it, but it's not something I would like. You said I would rather see it be Big E in that role, and he gets anointed at WrestleMania 37. Is that what we're on?
37. Yeah.
Okay.
yeah, it was supposed to be WrestleMania film strip, but it looks like it may be WrestleMania Pirate Flag Part 2, the way things are going. Now, here's my question for you, though, is that Royal Rumble, normally, you know, the title matches that take place on that show are guys who are probably only going to get a title shot at the Royal Rumble. You know, we've had Bob Holly get a title shot against Brock Lesnar, and that's the only one that I can really think of off the top of my head. But continuing the storyline of Roman versus the Family, and I know this is one of your favorites, so you probably would like to see this. Did we get Roman versus Nia Jax?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know why, but that tag team, her and Shayna Baszler, they just annoy the hell out of me. I can't pinpoint it. And maybe it's partly because of all the stories you hear about Nia hurting people. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. But, man, that team, the two of them, when I see them on TV, I literally want to change the channel.
Yeah. I don't think that will happen.
No, I don't either.
It would be interesting. Or, you know, in a more, I guess, logical sense, because of Roman beating up Jay, you know, we got the Night of Legends coming up in a couple weeks, which is just ratings are down. Let's trot out all the guys that we trot out every couple of years. Do we see, and I think that's actually going to be on Raw, so this probably won't happen. But if Rikishi came in and tried to get Roman's face, you know, would Roman beating up Rikishi, would that do anything to, I mean, does he need to get over more as a heel or put the character over? Or would it just be maybe not getting him over, but just a logical next step in that storyline that they're telling?
You know, I think it would be a logical next step in the story. I don't think he needs it to you know, I think really, you know, or he attacks Afa and Sika, which is his dad Sika?
I don't know, but I mean, they kind of anointed him.
Right, that's what I mean. Like, there's no one else in that family, I think, to attack other than Rikishi, which would be logical because he's beaten up his sons. And then, of course, The Rock. The Tonga Kid, he is. I think so. I think he is. Was Tonga Kid the one that became the Samoan Savage?
Maybe.
And I think he – yeah, that Samoan family is so deep and so – you know, there's so many members to it. I'm not sure.
Who teamed with Rikishi at WrestleMania 9 against the Steiners?
That was Samu.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Samu and Fatu, which I think Samu left, obviously, and then the Barbarian kind of replaced him for a little bit as Sione. But then after that, I feel like, because I feel like in WCW, there were three Samoans. It was Samu, Fatu, and I think it was the Samoan Savage who was the Tonga Kid at one time.
Yeah. That sounds right.
So, but I don't know whatever happened or whatever became of him. I know he's still, you know, alive, but I don't know what his involvement with any of it or the family goes. And what exactly, since you brought her up, what is Naya's role in the family line? Do you know? Is she just cousins?
She's a cousin, but I don't know, again, where the tree comes together.
Yeah. It is very interesting. I did want to ask you too. Did you get to go to any, you know, I know you came in for a Stride show, but were you able to attend any live wrestling events in 2020?
I think the last one that I did would have been a Wrestling Pro Wrestling show.
Okay.
But I don't remember. It probably was in February, I think, would have been the last one. And I believe that's, I don't remember what the name of the show was, but I believe that's when the Dark Sheik defended the mid-card title against Gregory Schmegery. And then after that, Darwin Finch came out and they set up a Falls Count Anywhere match for the next show, which I'm still waiting to happen. And that was the one where Giraffe Adora beat up Gentleman Jervis.
Mm. So. Yeah, so, you know, I actually lucked out in 2020 and my friend and co-host on Two is Greater Than One, Tyler Heath Hatton, had gotten contacted by WWE in January about appearing at SmackDown and at Raw. And SmackDown was 2 hours away in Evansville, Indiana. So it was a Friday night and, you know, kind of last minute, Jay Spade and I made the trip over. And literally as we were walking through the arena doors over in Evansville, he texted me and said, "I'm not going to be on tonight." And I hadn't told him that we were coming. We were going to surprise him. But so we, you know, obviously we stayed and watched the show and, you know, had a good time. It was the first time I'd been to a, I think that might've been the very first SmackDown TV taping or TV broadcast I'd ever been to. I don't think I've ever been to one before. And it was the first WWE live event I'd been to since they did a house show in 2018 in Carbondale. So it was a long time coming, and I was happy to be there and whatnot. But he ended up appearing then on Monday Night Raw. It was the night that Asuka sprayed Becky Lynch in the eyes with the mist, and he comes out and assists her. And we've talked about it in detail. But, you know, that's another personal highlight for me of 2020 was getting to see someone that I know, you know, get a little bit of national exposure, even though it was in a extra role, if you will. But it's still pretty cool nonetheless. And Brandon Espinoza, who is another friend from Stride and from AAPW, was one of King Corbin's guys that he carried out on the sedan at that SmackDown event. So, excuse me, it's kind of cool to see those things happen for people that you know. And you know, you mentioned Wrestling Pro Wrestling, and we've had Darwin Finch on the show before, and Gentleman Jervis has been on, and you've spoken and had talked to these guys too outside of the ring. So it's always cool when you see people you know kind of get a little bit of the attention and of the spotlight.
Yeah, and actually, I just saw that Jervis and Darwin teamed up together as Friendship Farm on the latest Championship Wrestling from Hollywood show. So
cool.
It's good to see. I know Jervis has been on there several times, but it's good to see Darwin getting some higher profile bookings. And hopefully, you know, hopefully in the next year, they'll at least show up on an episode of AEW Dark, because they got that West Coast connection with the Young Bucks and the Cutlers and some of the other people that have been in on dark matches have come from the West Coast.
So yeah,
we'll see if that pays off. But yeah, it's, yeah, you know, I do miss going to the monthly Wrestling Pro Wrestling shows. Like, I'd only discovered them like 5 months prior to everything shutting down. But that was, you know, one of my highlights looking forward to the year. And, you know, we were also supposed to be going to WrestleMania film strip in LA this year. That, you know, who knows what's going to happen now. And but I am just ready, I think, for things to get back to some sense of normalcy. And, you know, I'm even debating if Royal Rumble, if WrestleMania turns out to be WrestleMania Pirate Ship 2, like, if there is a crowd, I may just go, just because it's been, you know, so long. And you know, we will, if you join me, which I would hope, but we will cosplay as some luchadors so we can wear a mask the entire time.
Be safe.
And, you know, finally, maybe we can do the Killer Bees like I've wanted to do for a few years. And you can be Piper Machine or Piper Bee, or I'll be Coco Bee. And
God.
But no, we were going to do the Machines. Yeah, we can do
yes.
The Machine and Super Machine, Giant Machine. But yeah, I am hoping in 2021 that things, you know, even if it doesn't go back to full normalcy, at least bring the crowds back, because I think that's been the biggest hindrance to wrestling. And that's where, you know, I'll give AEW credit, is they figured out a way to put the wrestlers that weren't appearing on Dynamite at ringside. The wrestlers were energetic, and they actually worked storylines into people being at ringside and setting up matches. And you know, I'm kind of surprised that it took WWE so long to not necessarily do the Thunderdome, but even to bring fans in. Before, but then, you know, I've been critical with you in text about this, that when they had their trainees or whoever people at ringside in the performance center, it seemed like they just got people. It was worse than the audience that Impact would get as tourists at Universal. It just seemed like these people in WWE's training facilities had never watched wrestling before. Like, they didn't know how to cheer. They didn't know who to cheer for. It just seemed very awkward. And so, I'm still not big on the Thunderdome, just because it's a little too busy with everybody having a different background. But I think it's an interesting look. But, you know, and I've read reports that WWE likes it because they can pipe in whatever crowd noise they want. And tell the story that they want to tell. You know, if they want everybody to boo Roman, they're going to pipe in the boos. If they want everybody to cheer Randy Orton, they'll pipe in the cheers. So, you know, I'm not big on that. But yes, I do think fans – I think this is a big year to realize how big of a part fans play in wrestling. And hopefully when we get fans back, that they understand that and don't just try to get themselves over all the time.
Agreed. And as we wrap up the Centies, I do want to – you mentioned AEW Dynamite or AEW Dark, and I forgot that Joey O'Reilly, who is a part of Stride Pro Wrestling as well, was part of a six-man tag on AEW Dark earlier this year as well. So kudos and congratulations to him. But do you think that with – you know, it has not been cost prohibitive, I don't think, you know, not doing house shows, and AEW never really did house shows. They never got into that space, but they obviously traveled with Dynamite, and for their pay-per-views, WWE, you know, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, you know, on the road as well, but they both have facilities at their disposal in Florida. Do you see a future where fans now come to them versus them coming to the fans? So in other words, will we see a SmackDown in Evansville, Indiana again, or an AEW Dynamite in St. Louis? Or is everything going to be home base and we, the fans, are going to have to, you know, get our sunscreen and flip-flops and travel to Florida to enjoy live pro wrestling in terms of the bigger names, the bigger stars? Because, you know, back in the day when we were fans, the TV shows, the syndicated shows were platforms to advertise the live events that we would go to and you know, cheer for our favorites and boo the bad guys. But has that formula become outdated and now it's going to be all in one spot?
I don't think it'll be all in one spot, just because, you know, you look at Impact Wrestling, you know, being at the Impact Zone at Universal Studios, like, and even going back to the early days of Impact when it was at the fairgrounds in Nashville, you would get the same fans week after week, and they, you know, that doesn't lead to a good show because the fans get too complacent with what they're seeing. But I do think that I don't think we'll see the traveling house show circuit like we have seen. I think we'll get Raw, SmackDown, and Dynamite emanating from a different place every week, but that will be it. You're not going to get the Thursday, Friday, Saturday house shows. Just because, you know, I think WWE has cut back on their house show team or people, and they saw, I believe if memory serves right with what I've read, is they've actually seen an uptick in merchandise sales from the shop zone. So instead of having to, you know, carry everything out to the merchandise booth, which doesn't even cover half the products that are available.
Right, yeah.
You know, they only sell the people that they want to seem to be over. So I think if you can cut your costs on traveling, but I still think you want to have live shows not emanating from the same place every week because you want new fans.
And, yeah, you know, I agree with that.
It may be, you know, it may be something, you know, like where you have a 4 or 5 city loop
mm-hmm.
that you could do every week, you know, especially since everybody seems to be mostly based in Florida or Georgia. If you do Tampa, Miami, Jacksonville, Orlando, Atlanta, you know, just keep it that way and see what happens. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what definitely does happen with wrestling in the coming years. You know, I think I saw a headline that said CM Punk says wrestling will be dead in 10 years. I'm not going to go that far, but I think definitely we won't see wrestling the way it has been in the last 20 years.
Yeah, that is for sure. And another thing you won't see here on the My 123 Cents podcast or here on the My 123 Cents podcast, you will hear and experience some changes and some things that you and I are going to talk off air about as well. But it's been a great year. You know, I know it's been a crappy year in terms of a lot of things for a lot of people. But, you know, I still want to remain positive and optimistic. And, you know, I think that the changes that we see on the wrestling front in 2021 will be for the better. And obviously jobs were lost. And, you know, we talked about the lives that we, you know, those who passed away at the start of the podcast. You know, those things always, you know, we get a little melancholy as we look back and reflect and remember the year that we just experienced. But I really want to hope for and believe that, you know, by summer, especially, you know, you'd mentioned WrestleMania. I'd be hesitant on there being a live WrestleMania, but I think by SummerSlam for sure you're going to have crowds. But I hope I'm wrong, but I think that as we ease back into life post-COVID, or at least post-quarantine, that everyone is happy and healthy and is able to enjoy the things that they enjoyed before all of this started. Because, you know, like you said, it's not just wrestling shows, it's concerts, it's sporting events, it's everything else that we've had to kind of put on the back burner or consume in a different fashion. And hopefully, you know, I do feel like the wrestling industry has a handle on things and has really made the experience for the fans as enjoyable as humanly possible.
Yeah. I don't know what to add to that. I think we'll just, I've been so optimistic earlier in this year and thought, you know, by this time we would be back to
mm-hmm.
somewhat normal.
Sure.
And even now, you know, not to get all political and whatnot, but we have the vaccine being rolled out. But, you know, I've seen reports saying, well, it'll still take 10 years to get back to normal, even though we have the thing that they said that we had to get before we could get back to normal to begin with. So I'm just going to live my life one day at a time. And yeah, again, you know, as I like to say over on the Positive Cynicism podcast, you know, I like to do something positive. I'm going to focus on, or as Michael Jackson would say, I want to start with the man in the mirror and, you know, just try to be a better person and leave the world a better place than where it is with whatever I can do. So there's your happy, touchy-feely.
There you go.
Portion for the show.
And I'll be your Snyder since you're going to live life one day at a time. So 10 people will get that reference, but all right, buddy. Well, thank you. Hope you had a great Christmas and I hope that New Year is as fun and exciting for you as well. And I'm sure we'll see each other, whether it's at WrestleMania or at a Stride show or something along the way as well, I'm sure. But Chad, take care of yourself and Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year.
All right.
Soon.
Friends, thank you so much. Have a great week, a great New Year, and we will, as Chad said, talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.